Welcome to Landwards, the podcast for the land-based engineering community, brought to you by the Institution of Agricultural Engineers.
Hello and welcome to Landwards, the podcast of the Institution of Agricultural Engineers. I'm your host for today, Andy Newbold, and I am joined by none other than Steve Constable, the new president of the institution. Hello, Steve.
Hello, Andy.
Hi, thanks for joining us, Steve. Well, we're going to start at the top, really. Not the purpose of the podcast is really to help listeners get to know you and to find out what makes you tick a little bit more. So other than knowing that Steve is our new president, tell us your background and how you became an ag engineer.
Okay, thanks, Andy. Yeah, so I grew up on Exmoor in a small village called Luxborough, and it's a fantastic time. The freedom was amazing, and thinking about it now, it's probably the life that most people are actually aiming for currently. The remoteness of our house meant that we didn't have any main services, not until I was about 19. And that was only electricity, which we installed ourselves. We dug a trench nearly a mile long to the nearest transformer. Prior to this, we ran listed generators, and I was the keeper of the generators and the mechanic. And I guess this was probably the start of my interest in engineering. I also had own trials and motorcycles. Since I was 9 years old, my father helped me and my brother if we needed to repair them. But the onus was squarely on us to do the work. So I had worked on my best friend's 800-acre mixed farm since I was very small. And when I left school at 16, I went and worked there full time. My job involved operating the kit and repairs and servicing, as well as all the livestock-related tasks for the 1,000 ewes and 70 suckler cows. So it was a very busy time. I was really keen, and one day I was told to have a day off because I'd worked there for 3 years without a day off. I've frozen.
Yeah, full marks for dedication, I think, at that point, Steve. I've been working for 3 years. I take it you've had some holiday since then, have you?
But Spaldings do work you very hard.
So anyway, carry on.
Okay. So after some time, I knew that I really enjoyed the machinery side. So with the help of my then girlfriend and now my wife, we planned how I was going to do this, as I had left school with only a CSE in metalwork. As I had no real qualifications and I was missing the basics, I had to walk a path to reach my goal of being a qualified agricultural engineer as soon as possible. I really wanted to go to Harper Adams, as I knew quite well, because my wife was an agri student there, and I'd seen the facilities and aware of the outstanding reputation they had. But the first stage of my plan was to attend Cannington College near Bridgewater to gain a one-year certificate in agriculture. On the course, we undertook duties in the mornings in pig, poultry, and dairy farms. And as I was slightly older than most students, I started to occasionally milk cows for a farmer and drive his tractors at silage time. So he let me live in his cottage out of college. My next move was to Lacken College. I'd met with the principal at the time and was told that I wouldn't be able to do the NDA Ag Eng as my maths were non-existent. So I went back to Cannington to reassess the next move. Shortly afterwards, however, I was contacted by him and told that if I committed to extra maths, then they would give me a chance, which I did. The course was very hands-on, and there was a sandwich year where I was a mobile fitter with a van after 3 months. Enjoyable, but very long hours. On qualifying, I approached Harper Adams, and the principal, Tony Harris, invited me to come up and have a look. We met, and he personally took me round for a full tour. It's not as extensive as it is now, I must add that. And then a cup of tea in the staff room. I was so nervous, but he put me at ease very quickly. He explained that he was looking to start a new two-year course for students who had previously had some industrial exposure. But the only issue was my maths level. I explained how it worked at Lacken. A couple of days later, I received an offer with a proviso that I still maintained extra maths to reach the standard. The course was everything that I'd wished for, and it did stretch me, but with the help of the brilliant staff, I made it and reached the goal. Incidentally, the first year when I was there was when I joined the IAGRA. Jeff Wakeham had mentioned to me the benefits, and I became a member.
You probably won't be surprised to know that maths I found a real stumbling block, and I had to do extra maths when I was at Harper doing my degree. So I think it's a common thing that often people who want to do agricultural engineering may not be classically strong in maths, but there is a recognition that you know, with a bit of work, you can get through that. And thankfully, I don't do an awful lot of maths nowadays, so I've managed to chance it for the last 30 years, Steve. You can probably relate, I imagine.
Yeah. So, I found the maths so difficult, you know, but anyway.
Yeah, I struggled all the way through with maths, and yeah, it's a core competency for engineering. So, you know, I've been forever grateful for the support I had and the encouragement I had to just keep plodding on at it, really, because it was never my favourite subject. So after Harper, talk us through your next steps from there.
Okay, yeah. So after leaving Harper, I really wanted to undertake some sort of product development and research. So I secured a position at Spalding's in Lincoln as the assistant manager of the product development department. After a couple of months, my confidence was really boosted after winning a bronze medal award from the Douglas Bomford Trust for innovation on my Harper project. I was fortunate enough to have a very talented brother-in-law who was the director of GKN at the time. He advised me that an MBA would be very commercial and extremely useful. So I studied with the Open University part-time to raise the bar and to qualify. After a short time, I was promoted to the manager, and then I set up the QC department, which was non-existent when I arrived. I then became a director.
That at first glance seems a very, very linear career progression, doesn't it? Yeah. But obviously, given that, you know, you started a long way back before Harper with recognising the steps you needed to take to get to a degree, let alone thinking you needed to move on to do an MBA and so on and so forth. Thinking back to what you knew and when you knew it, if you get what I mean by that, because obviously what we now know, we all wish for a time machine and to go back in time and be able to apply it when we should have applied it all those years ago. Yeah. What advice would you have for younger engineers or potential engineers?
Yeah, my advice would be to basically have a goal. That's the main thing. You need something to concentrate on. You need to have a reason to study, a reason to learn, and you need to focus on something. It doesn't have to be a set target, but it has to be a plan, and then you can channel all your energies into that plan, basically. Basically, if I have a dream and a goal, just follow it. I was very fortunate to talk to other people that were very qualified. I learned from their successes and their failures, and we all do that.
And I think having a few professional friends, in my experience, is a really powerful thing. People who've got your best interests at heart and maybe a bit more experience to support you with what you think or where you think you're going to be. You know, you made the point earlier as well. Not everything in engineering is exciting, is it?
No, it's not. No. Standing in the middle of a field in the mud, in the freezing cold, is not exciting. That's one of the key things, is don't lose sight of what you're trying to achieve. You know, I've spent many, as you have probably, Andy, many an hour standing in a cold field. It's not the most exciting.
Yeah, thinking, what the hell am I doing here?
Exactly, you know. Maybe I should have done something different, but you mustn't lose sight of where you want to go. And once you've achieved it, it's a precious time for you.
I'd echo that wholeheartedly. So, given that, you know, being a member of the Institution of Agricultural Engineers has been sort of a bit of a bedrock or a constant through various steps in your journey, just give me a bit more detail. How has being a member of the institution helped you?
Well, it's actually been very, very important to me. When you're young, you start out on your journey. You've got great ideas, lots of enthusiasm, lots of drive, lots of energy, and it's quite easy to think that you know more than other people. And you can sometimes get into a position where you're like a boat that's adrift. You know, the direction becomes unclear. And then there's a danger of you thinking, well, maybe I should be doing something else. I think the IAGRE for me has been like a rudder on that boat. It allows you to reset and reestablish the best direction. The resources that the IAGRE have available to members, wide and varied. And one of the most important things, I think, is networking opportunities. The membership is a body of highly experienced people. And I think that's invaluable, the networking. And if you've got a problem, you can say, I've come up with this. What come up against this? What do you think? And they'll put you straight. And the continuous professional development, I think, is key to professional registration. And the IAGRI offers that route. My question to any young engineer listening to this is, if you haven't joined, why not?
Yeah, fair comment. So let's have a look at the discipline or the world of agricultural engineering, if you like to call it that. What's your vision? Where do you think we're going?
Well, agricultural engineering, it's evolving at a rapid pace, and the requirement for good quality food and water is paramount in a growing world. And then we've also got the environmental issues to consider. What will the future agricultural engineer look like? I think they'll be highly qualified individuals with specialist knowledge of their particular area of any land-based industry. I would like to see the agriculture engineering industry to be recognised by everyone for the skill and professionalism that's involved to help with the production of the vital component called food. Someone said the other day, when the last tree is cut down and the last field is built on, what should we do then? Should we eat our money? I mean, some might argue that food production is absolutely important, because if you haven't got it, then you're likely to perish. So investment in agriculture engineering is vital for ours and the planet's well-being, whether it be in research, science, mechanics, fabricators, or students. I think we need to keep increasing the investment in the young people and the technologies by governments and private funding. I mean, many of the machine builders are investing heavily in new technologies and training, which is fantastic and very exciting. And we need to maintain and encourage that investment going forwards.
So you've set your stall out there, Steve, in terms of your vision. A little bit closer to home there. What would you like to achieve as president in the next 2 years?
Well, I mean, there's never been a more exciting time for a young person to get involved in this industry, as it's now the focus of many governments and the realisation that maintaining our natural resources is vital for the good of humanity. So as president, I think that increasing our membership is important. Encouragement of the younger generations to be part of this exciting and vital industry, to be involved and make the difference, is a vital task for us. The IAGRI allows a younger person to build on their academic qualifications and gain professional qualifications like a doctor and lawyers. And that will help them in their career progression. So continuous professional development can be registered as their careers progress, and the networking opportunities with professional members is very high. So selling the benefits to be involved in being a member of the Institute is an important task. And I know that we're constantly considering this, and Charlie has taken the bull by the horns and is actively out there. But I would encourage all members to talk about it and the benefits of it, as Jeff Wakeham did for me many years ago. And I would also actively encourage inclusion from people of all backgrounds who have a genuine interest in making a difference in this industry, and remove any perceived barriers that they might come across.
Hear, hear. Given the world we're in at the moment, and the fact that data and technology and agri-tech is all around us, what's your take on big data, robotics and AI in ag?
Okay. Well, this is one of my favourite subjects. So given the challenges facing us, we need to make every effort to increase production with the backdrop of a changing climate. And as climate is a key component to food production and biofuel production, then the more data, the better to predict variables. So big data allows farmers to monitor weather patterns, soil conditions, fertilizer, etc. And will also allow an educated decision on which crops work best. Reduction of chemicals, reduced fuel due to machine management controls, increased animal welfare, and better management of the supply chain is now possible using the big data. I mean, big data is here and it can help with current challenges and will be a key component for the future, especially with the growing development of the robotics and AI. I mean, this isn't science fiction. Imagine telemaps on an inter-tractor communication can be used as a rudimentary farm swarm platform. where dozens and hundreds of agricultural robots with thousands of microscopic sensors, which together monitor, predict, cultivate, and extract crops from the land with practically no human intervention. Small-scale implementations are already on the horizon with researchers and scientists, and they're looking for a scientifically possible horizon of 2023 next year and a financial horizon of 2026 to bring this into reality. Big data, robotics, and AI will be part of our future.
And certainly, if you look at the work of Hands Free Farm, for instance, something which is quite close to home for us both, you know, it's sort of future present, really, rather than future, isn't it? In that, you know, for several years, crops have been grown without human intervention in a farm specific setting.
Yeah, it's extremely exciting, Andy. You know, it's extremely exciting because young people should know. We need to get a message out to young people to get them interested in this type of work. Because when you think of a traditional agriculture engineer, you think of somebody with a pair of overalls on, covered in oil, fixing a tractor in the mud. It's not like that nowadays.
Absolutely not.
You know, it's important.
No, it's exciting and it's fascinating. And as you say, it's vital. So given that we live, and I hate this phrase, so I apologise in advance, given that we live in interesting times at the moment, how can ag engineers offer solutions?
Well, research and development to real world issues is key. Agricultural engineers, they're extremely resourceful people and will always think outside the box. They will challenge perceptions before accepting the norm. And this attitude is important and a basis to innovate, test and prove to arrive at future solutions. Something which is sometimes overlooked is the necessity to get in front of the key decision makers. Also, it's a vital part of the process. And institutes such as ours have the responsibility solutions, no matter how good, need the will and investment to succeed. Engineers are looking at the soaring costs associated with fuel and energy, with developments happening as we speak to overcome our reliance on the fossil fuels. As with food security, looking at to alternatives and efficiency increases. And this is an ongoing process. I mean, it's quite amazing. There are many startup agritech businesses. I think I read there were about 650 now in the UK being run by some very clever people, which does give reassurance that solutions are being actively developed and being funded partly by the government who have the appetite, who appreciate the changes now, basically.
Thinking back over your career then, you know, given that we've had a good look to the future and where we think ag engineering is sitting, what step changes, what big shifts have you seen during your career, and what do you think the next ones will be?
Yeah, I mean, it's been massive. The agriculture engineering landscape has changed dramatically since I first started. And when I was a mobile fitter, we didn't have computers, we didn't have mobile phones, we had no internet access, but we had workshop manuals and toolboxes. Machines were basic and repairs were component changes rather than whole assembly replacements. So everything was pretty much repairable. As farming practices changed and the efficiencies increased, we've seen a step change in the agriculture engineer's role. And I believe that this step change will take place again, possibly as quick as the next decade. Moving to specialist engineers in robotics and AI alongside more traditional engineers. And farm workshops will have to either develop their staff or use the dealer more as the technology changes, because it's going to be out of reach soon. The iAgri is well placed to be at the forefront of this changing landscape. So it's really an exciting time for us.
It's a great time. And, you know, I know I've probably used this phrase for about 20 years now, but it is a great time to be an agricultural engineer. Mm-hmm. You know, there's big challenges, there's big innovation. You know, and it's mega exciting as far as I'm concerned. Well, look, Steve, you know, this has been a fascinating insight into your world. And, you know, I'm genuinely excited about the next 2 years with you as president. And it's been a real pleasure spending some time with you, getting to know you a little bit more and finding out a little bit more about you as well. So thank you for your time today. I mean, I should at this point do the desert island dish thing and say, what's your luxury item you're taking with you for the next 2 years as president, and maybe your favorite record, but I'm not sure if I'm putting you on the spot too much.
Yeah, I think what would be my favorite thing to take with me? Isn't it supposed to be a brown towel, isn't it?
Possibly. Yeah, it is a Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. It's a brown towel, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a brown towel, isn't it? I think.
You know. So aside from that, you've already given me the title for the podcast now, but now that you've referenced The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which will delight listeners of a certain age, and those of you who don't know what The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy is, get yourself an Amazon and spend you £3.
Well, they'll have to Google it, won't they?
Yeah, well, they're very true, yes, let alone mentioning Terry Pratchett, which again dates us both even further. So, Steve, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you very much for spending the time today. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Andy. Thanks for the opportunity.
You're very welcome. You have been listening to Landwards, the podcast of the Institution of Agricultural Engineers. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to catching up with you soon.
For more information, visit www.iagri.org. You have been listening to Landwards, the podcast for the land-based engineering community, brought to you by the Institution of Agricultural Engineers.